titty titty tap tap, titty titty tap tap, titty titty tap tap, yeah. Wow. Và đây là postcard chi chat cùng Trang ha.
What do Vietnamese people now think about Americans, like from America?
I'm not sure, but I think we just don't really care about it.
Okay.
I mean, like, it's already gone.
Yeah.
And we happy with our life right now. But as the social media is kind of popular right now, like you can get all information from internet. I think that most of Vietnamese teenagers, they are really, really into American culture.
Yeah, but
like you can't deny it. I'm also into that.
I mean, America has produced a lot of media, like movies, music, stuff like that, which gets really popular around the world. So like, I could see it. America doesn't really like interacting with other countries' media, though. But that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like America. I can't, like, if someone was to ask me, like, what do you think Americans think about this country? I couldn't have anything to say because I'm like, I don't think they even think about other countries to be rich. Like, if you ask me, what does America think about, you know, India? I would say Americans probably would just say, I like Indian food and that's it. I feel like they don't form opinions on places or people from those places unless it's like, China or any kind of like global competition in that moment. Like China is currently America's biggest like economic competition.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of Americans, maybe not a lot, I don't know. But like, I think that there would be a good amount of Americans, especially ones that supported Donald Trump, would say that they really don't like China.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's also some who, like a lot, who just say, like, I don't know, it's a country, I don't care. They're there, I'm here.
True.
It'd be
I
like
think it's
that.
Also worked the same in Vietnam. Yeah. I don't get it, but I think that people don't really read the news and get the new, like, they don't understand it fully.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just know that there is something, like some conflict between American and China, and then they were like, okay, China used to invade us a lot and they are bad people. Maybe I just gonna go to American side.
Yeah.
But then if there are something in between happened between the relationship between Vietnam and American, and they would be like, why they have to be like that? They used to like making our country became poor and destroy our country. Mm-hmm. And then now they don't want us to like grow anymore or something like that. But then I remember there was a time when Donald Trump was the president and then he came to Vietnam for some kind of conference or something like that with the North Korean, and then all Vietnamese people are like, it's a good chance for Vietnam to be chosen as the host country for this conference.
But it happened in Singapore, didn't it?
No, I think
it did happen.
Well, I think it happened in Vietnam and then in Singapore too.
Oh, it was in
because
Hanoi,
there,
right?
Yeah. I don't actually remember, but I think it's in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then people were like, they just go to the road and then welcome all the president. And I was like, okay, but what does that have to do with our country, which is the host country? It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I'm like, we're hosting an argument between two other nations. Woo!
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of proves that they're a neutral country, which is good. I think being neutral has been quite beneficial for, like, Switzerland has been neutral for, like, ever, and Swiss people mad rich, so.
Well, I think it's true because I read an article about how Vietnam keep relationship with other big country like China, India, the European Union and American, and that I think that the person who wrote that article would kind of have his point of view, and he's quite right because like Vietnam is always in between. It doesn't choose his side.
Yeah.
As always Sometimes we'll be on China's side, and sometimes we'll be American side, yeah. And then just keep that relationship to be like, oh, I'm your friend, but yeah. Not the bad friend yeah. That you're gonna tell everything for me. But yeah. Then I'm always gonna be on your side, and you're gonna help me with that.
Yeah, she like at least the neutrality I was thinking of was the Swiss neutrality of. I really don't give a fuck about anyone unless they're giving me money.
Well, like,
that's Swiss neutrality.
Because they are rich, but Vietnam yeah. Is not.
Yeah, yeah.
So Vietnam I think has it's to good. I think play it's the
good.
Role.
I think yeah. That's a good international strategy. I remember I saw this thing. Don't know if it'll happen or not, but it was like this news channel on YouTube, and they were mm-hmm. talking about the future of Vietnamese politics and their influence on the global economy and stuff. And they were saying,
really?
Like, and they were saying like, Vietnam, has a good chance of being as economically important as China is today.
Why?
I don't know. I don't remember, but I think it was because partially location, partially their new, like their ability to, make friends with a lot of different countries because mm-hmm. they could be friends with China and be friends with the US at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is a very difficult skill to uphold because a lot of countries I feel like are having difficulty now with figuring out like what economic superpower do they want to side with?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. True. And then also not following kind of political trends in other countries, like mm-hmm. Like for example, one thing that I'm thinking of is like gayness, like the legalizing gay marriage seems mm-hmm. to be a political tool in a lot of places,
mm-hmm.
and I you know in China, I heard that
they banned it.
Not I don't know if they banned it, but I know that it's more difficult to be gay in China, in mainland China. Than it would be in a place like, you know, the EU or in America. And then I heard that, like, Taiwan, maybe the reason why they legalized gay marriage was partially for more separation from China.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, look at us. We're different. We legalized gay marriage. We support gay rights. China doesn't. So maybe they're trying to, like, push on their own individuality as a country.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Like, we're our own country. We're not part of China. Which I don't have any stance on. If you think Taiwan is part of China, I think it's not. I really don't care. It's not my business. I don't live there. It's not going to affect my coins. But this is just a theory I've been thinking about. And it seems like Vietnam doesn't really allow these kind of outwardly forces to influence its own policymaking.
Mm-hmm. True.
Because from what I heard, like, Vietnamese people are quite like, accepting of
like the government. The government, like, doesn't really care about those things. Like yeah. They only focus on how to make Vietnam grow stronger and make the economy more, like, I don't know. They just focus on Vietnamese people and Vietnamese economy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's also a good thing. But at the same time, I think it's kind of old fashioned.
But I mean, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of good because maybe not, the ignoring other civil liberties and things like that, but maybe more focus on the quality of life of your people is something that America could learn from Vietnam, because why should health insurance be $250 a month? Yeah, in America, it seems like, and it wasn't always like this, but in more recent history, America's been very like pro-capitalism to the point where like, capitalism seems like the national identity. Mm-hmm. And I think it was after like the Red Scare where they used communism as like a reason to go to war within the country. So they were like, we want to liberate Vietnam from the communists. So that's why they went to war in Vietnam.
Okay.
But in actuality, I think it was just because they knew that if communism spread in America, then it would lead to America maybe getting more communist policies, which means that the rich in America would have a more difficult time getting richer.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if it'll be true, if that would be true, because if you look at China and Vietnam now, they're not really communist. They are to be more communist for the aesthetic, I would say. But if you actually look at the economy, it's not really like that, and yeah, that it, there aren't as many socialist policies as you would expect there to be, and it would be actually really hyper capitalist in those countries.
I mean, like, what I really like about Vietnam is that we are not totally 100% communism, like, yeah, as we were in the past. Like, we also learned a few things from other country. Like, we learned the best thing, and like all the thing that they think that it would be good and fit for our country.
Mm.
They just like mixing up between Vietnam and international, and it became like quite a good way to develop yourself and your country. Mm. And a lot of young people in Vietnam also have the same mindset. Like, partly they are Vietnamese, they still have that Vietnamese thinking, but the way they do their business and the way they think about life and other people are more Western, more American, or more something like that.
In what ways?
Like, in a bad ways. Like, they think that it will be good for our culture.
To,
like, not to be too capitalismus, but also still, I don't know how to say it, but it's like, I mean, like, it's hard to explain, but I mean, like, we, like, me and Tuan, we still basically Vietnamese.
I mean, well, I know that.
Yeah, we we still have something that Vietnamese things, like, our mindset is still Vietnamese.
And what is the Vietnamese mindset?
Like, you have to keep your traditional things, like, respect your family, respect your parents, and we also have our traditional things that I cannot
like fully Confucianism
explain. Maybe.
You know what Confucianism is? It's like the I don't know a lot about Confucianism, so if I get this wrong, tell her. But from what I understand, it's a philosophical mindset that's really, really complex, but the basics of it is there is a hierarchy within society that this person is higher than you and this person is below you. And when you speak to a person higher than you, then you have to give them respect. You speak to a person lower than you. You know, so you could treat the person below you like shit, and person higher than you, you have to treat better and all that. You know?
Well, it's basically like that, but not that hardcore. I mean, like, softened, because we think that because now the world changing and the society also change, and people think that when we go to work or like we go to school or something, you have to respect other respective and other right and thought. I mean, like, in the past, if you are not the boss, you don't have the right to speak it up or like stand against him, against the boss. But now in Vietnam, it's totally different. Like, you still have that boundary between boss and employee, but you still have to speak your mind. Still have that chance.
Yeah.
It's also what the same for the media. Like, in the past, I think that the government also controlled the media, but now it's like more freely, and people can get more trying to get their information from internet and also have the chance to share their thought about something on internet or on social network.
Yeah. I mean, I think in that case, Vietnam, they seem to be really like free flowing in terms of whatever they want. Yeah. Like, if they like something, like, we're going to do that. But our discussion is kind of reminding me of what my mom would tell me about what the Soviet Union was like, because that's where my mom grew up in. And when she would describe it, it sounds very different from any kind of society we would see now. Like, the way that they would distribute houses to people was a very different system. Like, you wouldn't just go out and buy a house.
That's
you would be given one, and then you could give it to your children if you want, and then the children could rent it out to someone for super cheap. But it's a little different because technically the government still owns it, and they can't take it away from you if they really need it for someone else. And there was also like land, like the government had extra land in the countryside, so they gave it to my grandfather, and he used it to build a summer home, and it's called a dacha. And he built a dacha. It was like a little home with like two bedrooms up top, a kitchen, and a swimming pool, and a giant garden. So we would go there over the summer, and there would be other like dachas nearby,
mm-hmm.
and we would like run around and interact with our neighbors a lot. Like a lot of times I would go over for lunch to my neighbor's house right next door,
mm-hmm.
and then in the evening I would just come back to my house, and it was a lot more of a community kind of vibe. The way she just described life even before Uzbek independence was much different than how Uzbekistan is now, and the culture back then, the way society ran, worked, and stuff was much different.
We were one time like that too. My mom and dad also tell the same story. Yeah. Like after all the war, Vietnam also learned from the Soviet Union mm-hmm. political ways.
Yeah.
And we also do the same. Like the government owned everything. And if you want to buy or if you want to have something, you have to have the ticket that the government give you. And you just only have a specific amount of thing that you can own or you can have. Like you go out for a grocery store or go to a supermarket. You cannot buy anything you want.
Yeah.
Just have a limited amount of it.
Yeah. It also depends on like your family status, what your parents do for work, where they are in the government and stuff, and how far they got ahead. Like sometimes they still had a currency, I believe, but so in university, every university student, mm-hmm. my mom was in university, said that they had to go out to the cotton fields mm-hmm. as a class field trip. And it was actually thought of to be fun. A lot of people were excited to go pick cotton for a summer. And her father, my grandpa, he went to go fix the plumbing at her school
mm-hmm.
for maybe for free or for super cheap or something as a favor to the principal. So he did it. And then the principal was like, oh, your daughter has to go to the camp to go pick cotton for the summer. And I guess my grandpa didn't trust my mom, and he thought that she would, I don't know, do something he didn't want her to do. So he said, no, you can't go to the thing. And my mom was like, no, it's required of my university. So her father went to the principal and was like, you're not going to send my daughter there. And he was like, well, they need to have 28 people. So who's going to go? And he was like, I don't know. That's your problem.
Not my problem.
So then the principal ended up going with the class to pick the cotton. And then mom stayed home.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good way to end the story.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Oh, dang. It's already been 52 minutes.
See, I tell you. Wow. Every time we talk, just
every time we talk, it just feels like 5 minutes. It ended up being a whole hour.
Ugh.
This is fun, though. I feel like we should do more of this. This is nice. Do you want to keep going, or do you want to
I think we should keep going, and I can split it into two parts.
Yeah. Let's do that. Funny thing. My grandma, on my other side, she used to be a Russian teacher for Vietnamese people who came from Vietnam to the Soviet Union
mm-hmm.
to learn trades or whatever they wanted to learn, mm-hmm. whatever they need to learn. But whenever Vietnamese people would come and they needed to learn Russian in the Soviet Union, my grandma would be the person who, at least in that district that she worked in, she would be the person who would do the Russian teaching lessons mm-hmm. for Vietnamese immigrants to the Soviet Union. And even in Uzbekistan, at least in my city, Tashkent, there was a lot of like Vietnamese restaurants. Not like a lot, but like there was more than I expected. Like Vietnamese businesses still open. Yeah.
Oh, I think there's a lot of Vietnamese people come to Russian. I mean like to Soviet Union because as I know, that after the war, we have a really good relationship with the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So that all these students who had the best score in their class in the university or else their family is really rich, that they can came to Soviet Union to like studying abroad, learn more about culture and how to develop your country, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of professor and like businessman who's really famous now in Vietnam, also because
grew up in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of this, and especially in Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan, there's a lot of like Vietnamese, Korean people, because during the war,
mm-hmm.
a lot of Korean people and Vietnamese people wanted to go to the Soviet Union because it was like easier access than going to, you know, America.
Yeah.
So a lot of them, either going for work or whatever they go for, the Soviet Union would eventually, a lot of them would be resettled in Uzbekistan and in Central Asia. I don't know exactly why it just ended up that way, but nowadays the most common last name in Uzbekistan and in Kazakhstan is Kim.
Kim,
because so many Korean people were moved there that being Korean Uzbek is really, really common in Uzbekistan. Like in Tashkent, yeah. there's a lot of Korean stores and stuff, but their Korean, the way that they speak, is more similar to North Korean Korean than mm-hmm. it is to South Korean. So if you take a Korean from Uzbekistan and put them in South Korea, they have a bit of a difficult time understanding what's happening,
okay.
Like what people are saying, because the words that they use are different. Like, for example, there's a word in Russian, a grocery store is called a magazin.
Okay.
And in Korean spoken in Uzbekistan, they would call it a magazin. But magazin. The word for a supermarket in actual Korean is like something else. We could actually search it up right now. Yeah.
I think because during the war, the Vietnamese war and the Korean war, like they were probably divided into two parts, the northern and the southern. And basically the northern is only, okay.
Supermarket.
But I think it's being...
It's English.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but in Korean, in Uzbekistan, they say magazin.
Magazin.
Yeah. To copy Russian magazine.
Okay.
And I wonder if Vietnamese did this, but I know that Korean in North Korea, they have less levels of politeness than South Korean. Like South Korean has 5 levels of politeness, but North Korean has only 3 levels of politeness. And Russian actually had the same thing, where they used to have a lot of levels of politeness in speech,
mm-hmm.
but it got kind of squished down a lot more, and the speaking started being more plain because you're supposed to think of everyone else as like your equal.
Mm-hmm.
So these different levels of hierarchy weren't very conducive to the communist ideology, I guess. So they wanted to change the way people spoke Russian to be more like you see other people closer as your equal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I do know, I researched the Vietnamese writing recently and I learned that it wasn't French people that created the Vietnamese writing system, it was Portuguese people. What were they doing? It was Portuguese people who went to Vietnam and they were like, we could do better. We'll change it.
Oh, well, but at the same time.
Not weird.
Portuguese and French is kind of same. Like, they are in the same.
They're both in Europe.
System.
They're both in Europe.
As I know, they're in the same language system. I mean, like
they're in the same language family. They're both Latin or French, Romance languages.
Spanish,
French,
Portugal, Italian.
And Romanian.
Yeah, and Romanian.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all Latin languages, but
so it's kind of that same. Was
funny. Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
Oh, I always thought it was by the French.
Nah, because apparently it's like much older. It was even before the French showed up. They created that and tried spreading it, but people still used Hanom, and then maybe the Latin became more popular. The Latin version of Vietnamese became more popular during the French. I don't know.
That's right.
Maybe a historian will listen to this and correct us.
I wish that we could learn it when we were in school. But
Hanom?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But Hanom, I actually tried to research a little bit of it because some of it, like some words sound really similar to Cantonese.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would want to see what they would be written like in Hanom.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be a lot of words. Like most of the words are similar. But on top of learning the maybe 2,000 to 3,000 characters you need to write everyday words in Chinese and in Vietnamese, Vietnamese people would have also had to learn special characters that only exist in Vietnamese.
Okay.
Which made up another probably 1,000, 2,000 extra characters. So like to become literate in Vietnamese, Vietnamese people would have to do like twice the work of somebody who would be speaking Chinese or
okay, I take it back.
Japanese.
I'm glad that we didn't do that.
So maybe you learned 4,000 kick, but maybe it'd be useful. But like, you know, it'll be harder, but it'll be useful.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it would be a good idea for us, like, to keep our traditional things.
Yeah.
Like, to keep our legacy. But then maybe it's too late now.
No, it's never too late. There's even, there's a Facebook group of people who are trying to keep Hanom alive or something, right?
I guess.
Juan showed it to me earlier that there was this people who, like, would pull up old Vietnamese documents of Hanom and, like, try to, you know, decipher what the hell they're saying. Yeah.
Okay, but not much people
know. Not many, probably.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it might be useful because there's certain words that just all sound the same, but they have different meanings. Like, Guan could have however many meanings.
Yeah.
And it's because there's different Chinese characters for the different meanings.
Well, I mean, it's a good way that we, like, we're not going to learn that Chinese character or that original Hanom character when we were in school. But we get to learn a lot about literature work that was written in Hanom, but was translated into our currently Vietnamese language. So it's kind of understandable. Like, we also get to know what this word had, this meaning, like what kind of different meaning that it has, and what it would be like when they used to use that word. Yeah, it's kind of fun, but I think if the educational system in Vietnam, I probably someday will giving an idea that Vietnamese student gonna learn how to write Hanom character. I think we won't agree to that.
I feel like a lot of people wouldn't want to do that, but what I will say is it will help Vietnam with reading in other countries, specifically like China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Japan. Because if a lot of Chinese people who would visit Japan, they know Chinese characters, and Japan uses a lot of them. So if they read Japanese sentences, they could kind of understand the basics of what the sentence means or is referring to, because all the Chinese characters, they know what they are. So it would be like, you know, fried eggs, blah, 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 me, blah, blah, eat, blah, blah. And they'd be like, oh, I eat fried eggs.
I eat fried eggs. But maybe it's one became true in Vietnam. Because I think people really hate Chinese.
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. There was a time, you know Da Nang, right?
It's the city?
Yeah. There was a part in Da Nang where all the restaurant, all the hotel is, all inside were basically in Chinese character.
Oh.
And Vietnamese people really gone mad. And they were like, this is Vietnam. Why are they doing like that? It's like part of Chinese, and the Chinese is invaded again.
But what if it's Vietnamese just written in Hanoi?
No, it's because we always have the fear that when Chinese people came to Vietnam, they will like slowly and low key invade it again.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at like ancient Chinese history, like the majority of China now, the Han, didn't they? They were like a small tribe in central China, and then slowly, through the different wars throughout history, they would just conquer one tribe, be like, here's my culture, conquer, and then they would together conquer another one, be like, here's my culture, conquer another one, and then it would just keep growing and growing. And then half of, I know the Guangxi province and Guangdong province in China, those used to be part of an empire. I believe it was called Viet Quoc, or in Cantonese, Yut Gok, if you want to research it. But then Han tribes must have taken over like half of it, and then the northern half of Guangxi, Guangdong, the part that kind of like wraps around the coast down towards Hong Kong, that part used to be part of a Vietnamese empire, and then Han people took it over, and then that became part of China. And maybe that's why they call it Vietnam, because that old empire, half of it was split off, so Vietnam now is the southern half of that old empire.
Maybe I will look up it again on Google. Hope it show up.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, there is a lot of, issue between Vietnam and Chinese relationship.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, we hate each other, but at the same time, Vietnamese people still, like, have to be, depends on Chinese market.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like that's a lot of countries in Asia of you don't like your neighbor, but you have to get along to make money.
Yeah, true, that.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big country.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like, how do you not interact with China? It's giant. It's one fifth of the world is China. And also, I was thinking about this recently. So I was like, growing up in America, we always were marketed the internet as like, this is access to the whole world. And you get to see all knowledge from all over the world. No, you don't. You only get to see knowledge of what other English speakers put on there. And I was like, only about like 1.2, 1.3 billion people speak English on Earth. So I only really have access to like 1/5 or 1/7 of the world that I thought I did. Because like, I don't know what's happening on the Chinese internet. I don't speak Mandarin. And it kind of like hit me because I was looking for a house. And then my friend my school, I told them like I was looking for a house. They were like, oh, let me add you on WeChat and I'll add you to this group. And when I tried to download WeChat, they said I couldn't be allowed in unless I had a mainland Chinese WeChat account give me access to WeChat. So I had to take a screenshot and send it to him. And then he like took the QR code and then it allowed me access into WeChat. And I in the US, I never had to do that, but maybe it's a European thing that China doesn't want Europeans on WeChat or something.
No, I think it's worked the same for all the country.
Really?
Yeah.
In Vietnam, do you guys also have to like prove yourself of like, I have a Chinese friend, let me in.
Yeah, I think it is. Like I have my adopted mother, she was a friend of my mom, like best friend. And then she's married a Chinese man. And she always have to talk to my mom through another, like another kind of social network, because not everyone in Vietnam can have access to Chinese network. And it's also work the same because Chinese government has stopped all the outside of social networks so that the Chinese people can only use the Chinese things.
Yeah.
And that will be easier for government to like controlling them and to get access to their account or information, personal information, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also, I don't know. So here's the thing. I grew up in America and I was taught a lot of things. I don't want to shit on America and say like, oh, America's this evil place on the planet, it's the worst place ever, because it's obviously not. Like, like living in America, there are certain things about life that are easier than if I grew up in Uzbekistan or if I grew up in Cambodia. Like, there are things about it that are nice, you know.
True.
And there are things that I love about American culture, like people typically are trying to be really, really kind. But I will say that in the education system, they do portray a narrative of other countries to benefit themselves more. So the narrative they give of China is like this evil, scary, crazy place. And like a lot of American media feeds into this and feeds this image of China that's really evil and scary. And I've never lived in China. So how could I know? So when I try to discuss ideas about China, I try to just ask Chinese people what their opinions are, because I have my opinions based off what I learned from growing up. Like, for the longest time, I thought Taiwan is just a different country. Like, that was just a good automatic assumption. Like, Taiwan is just a different country. And then I talked to a Chinese girl and I said, like, I refer to Taiwan as a country. And then, ooh, it's 1 hour and 8 minutes.
It's okay.
And then she was like, no, it's part of China. And I was like, oh. She's in China. I thought it was independent. So then I was researching it, and apparently it's this big debate because both Taiwan and China, at least for most of history, recent history, they've wanted to both be the same country. But Taiwan wanted to keep a capitalist market, and they also wanted to have a voting system, a democratic voting system.
Okay.
While China's version of what they refer to as their own democracy is not like that. It's where they have the Communist Party of China who kind of runs the whole thing, and the Communist Party has to do what the people want, and if the people don't like it, then I don't know what happens, because I haven't learned that before. But when I hear from Chinese people. Like, there was this video on YouTube of this channel called Asian Boss, where they would just send a person to another country.
I know that YouTube channel.
Yeah, and then they would just talk to them and ask them questions. And there was this video where they would talk about China, and they asked Chinese people about what they think about Taiwan. The internet filter, or about like their own society, because a lot of people outside of China, nobody else has this kind of internet filter like China has.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked these Chinese people, like, what do you think about the internet filter? And they were like, well, everybody knows how to get a VPN and stuff, and how to access foreign media if they wanted to, but we don't trust foreign media. So the filter, they thought in the video, the people that they interviewed said that they thought that the filter was a good thing because it keeps information that might be not true from getting into the hands of children, or from getting into the hands of like elderly people.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah. And I was like, I was kind of confused by that, because I was like, I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me, but I'm like, I don't know, because it's also a fair point, because it's like, you don't want people to read lies, but it's also restricting information, because who gets to decide what is and isn't true?
That's right.
I don't know. But if they're happy with it and the filter doesn't affect me, I'm fine. If that filter affects me, that's when I kind of would dislike it. But
well, I think it's kind of funny, because like, how can you not know anything outside of your country?
Yeah. But then go to America. They don't know anything about outside their own country, and they have a free internet. So yeah, it's kind of like fair.
Okay. It's their
not
own
anything
choice.
Obviously, there's many Americans who are interested in like other countries, such as myself. But mm-hmm. I mean, I will say that a majority of Americans are very America centric, and if they ever do want to go to a foreign country, they're like, I want to visit France.
I mean, like, there always gonna be some kind of people like that in any country. It's yeah. also the same in Vietnam yeah. too. There are a lot of people like, I don't give a fuck about the country or those people. I just need to know about my country.
But like, Vietnam is much smaller than America, and it has a smaller military. So the things that happen in other countries, like if something was to happen in Korea or North Korea or Japan or China, or in, you know, even Cambodia, this could legitimately affect how Vietnamese people in Vietnam live their lives. So yeah. I feel like it would kind of lead to you being more aware of what's happening. But in America, if something happens in Canada and Mexico, I don't know if it would affect our lives. Probably it would in some way. But the majority thinking, I think Americans would assume like that probably wouldn't affect us. Like, there was a giant earthquake in Mexico City one time. Mexico City is like the biggest city on the North American continent, and it killed a lot of people, and most Americans didn't even know it existed, because it's just like, it didn't affect them, so they just didn't care.
Okay.
Which was, it's
they
it's,
are being selfish.
Not like selfish, just like the news that they watch doesn't talk about anything, because they like that stuff, because they don't care about it. Most of the news in America covers stuff that happens in America. If it happens in another country, it has to be quite big and significant for it to be something that America needs to cover, I guess.
Okay. You know what? Even my mom in Vietnam know a lot of news here than me.
Yeah, but that's it, because she's your mom. She's like, my kid is in Germany. I want to know what's happening in Germany.
Well,
make sure she doesn't die.
Yeah, true.
Like, when I moved to Germany, my mom would like go online to Facebook groups in my city, and then just like try to figure out like what's happening in there to make sure I'm okay. If she sees any news on her timeline, like a bombing happened or something, she'd be like, you okay?
You okay?
I'd be like, I'm good, I'm chill, I'm fine.
Just chill, mom.
Yeah. I feel like she's more aware of like the coronavirus in Germany than I am sometimes.
That.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be like more aware of my opinions on other countries, and be aware of who influenced them and why they influenced that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, yeah, I've kind of come to the conclusion that every country is awful and cool in their own way.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been a lovely episode, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the clock, and it's like an hour and 22 minutes.
Oh my God, what the hell? Like, we've been talking for almost
an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah, but we still like, well, I thought we're just gonna talk for about a half a minute. Really, seriously.
Half a minute?
Yeah.
You felt like it was, or you thought we were going to talk for like half a minute? That was a short podcast.
I don't know.
I mean, I expected it to be like, I thought we'll end at like a comfortable 45 minutes.
But wow.
An hour and a half later,
well,
I lied to myself.
Yes. So I think we're going to I'm gonna split the episode into two parts.
That's fair. I feel like every time we make an episode, you have to split it into two parts. But at least next week, you don't really need to make content if you don't want to. Because if you're lazy, you can just be like, you get this.
Pickle, come and sit and talk to me in the podcast.
I will.
Yes.
Don't worry. Always. I'll even come down to Berlin just to bother you on your podcast.
I know.
All right. Well.
Oh, well. I think that we're going to stop our conversation here.
Yeah.
It's a good place. I have a bad news and a good news for you guys. Which one do you want to hear first?
I want to hear the good news.
Well, the good news is that Tico going to stay here with me until...
until probably April.
Yeah. So maybe you guys going to see him a lot more in my episodes. But the bad news is that Tico won't come back to my podcast for the few next episode because I'm going to make a different content, which he is not included.
Because I don't speak Vietnamese.
True.
Yet.
I will wait until you speak Vietnamese.
You're going to be waiting a while. It's hard.
Maybe it's about a few more years.
I'm still trying to learn German.
Good luck with that.
I'm still struggling with German. Give me a minute to learn Vietnamese.
I mean, like, good luck with that.
Yeah, but it's been real.
Yeah.
It's been fun. See
I'm
you.
Glad you have fun.
In a month or whenever I see this camera and this microphone again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hope you guys enjoyed your time listening to our voices.
Me too. Chân trên bên khi chiều nắng chưa phai.